Paywall Nation met Hallo Moon Bad Wolf auf Flux FM am Dienstagnachmittag. Heute Abend wird Aaron Bruno, der Kopf des Paywall Nation Projektes, mit seiner Band im Lido spielen, um die neue, just erschienene zweite LP Run vorzustellen. Jetzt ist er erstmal bei mir im Studio und wir quatschen über übergroße Welthits wie sein Stück Sail vom Debütalbum und finden vielleicht auch heraus, ob eine Hitsingle im Rücken das Komponieren von neuen Stücken einfacher oder schwerer macht. Wir sprechen außerdem über die Tatsache, dass Aaron gern alleine an Songs und Kompositionen arbeitet, ohne sich von anderen beeinflussen zu lassen. Wir sprechen über Genregrenzen und seine Vorliebe, diese zu überschreiten und vieles, vieles mehr. Zunächst aber heißt es nochmal, hello and welcome Aaron Bruno.
Hello everybody listening.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's good that you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's always a trip to do interviews in a different language because you could be saying whatever you want and I wouldn't know.
So, nice.
So I got to learn German. I got to learn so next time I can hang with you better and harder.
And faster.
That seemed sexual and I didn't mean it faster.
Yeah, you've got the faster thing.
Yeah.
No, I was only saying nice things about you.
Cool.
You can trust me on that. How's traveling been? Where are you coming from today, actually?
We woke up here. We flew in from Los Angeles last night, landed in one of our favorite cities in the world, Berlin, and we've been just cruising around, having some nice food, a couple of drinks, and we're ready to rock tonight.
Cool. Sounds good to me. Well, congratulations again on your second LP run.
Thank you.
An LP that has a very own sound to it again as well, because that was something that I loved from your debut record as well. There was a unique sound that you created and presented, and one can immediately recognize you as an artist when listening to the new record as well. Now, I've read that you were working alone most of the times while composing and recording this record. How important is being isolated from your point of view when one is in search for an own sound and an own song, an idea that's your own?
I found that if I was left alone, it was easier for me to exercise out these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But, sometimes I'll have an idea in a cab or an airplane or a car ride. Maybe on my way walking from this interview back to the venue, I'll have an idea and I'll record it into my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But once it comes time to actually take these songs and make them have a life of their own, then it's best that I'm alone.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been working on those songs? Because I hear a lot of love for the detail when I listen to the new songs. And I can imagine you being a madman in the studio, actually, because I think when you're listening to the details so close, it's getting a hardcore job, actually, right? And you're close to getting out of your mind.
Well, I am who I am. So, I mean, that's just how I see how I feel that the song will come across best.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, I try to not, let anything get on the record that sounds like any other band, so I do my best with my engineer. It's important that I mention my engineer because I couldn't do it without him.
Yeah.
And so if I have an idea or a tone or a sound or a beat or a drop or anything like that, I can accomplish that. And that's what is most exciting about recording for me nowadays is technology has become so user-friendly that if I think of it, I can do it.
Yeah, that's totally true. And do you use your engineer only as a technical guy or do you use him as a mirror sometimes as well?
Sometimes, he's the only one in the room, so I'm like, hey, am I full of, I can't cuss, can I?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, am I full of shit or not? And he was good at keeping me honest. If he's like, it's okay, but maybe you could do a little bit better. That was his nice way of saying, because I've known it. We have a good relationship.
Yeah, because I can imagine as well that you can get totally lost in the production of a record like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be like 2025 right now.
Right.
And we'd be talking about the second album of yours because the way that you work on music.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that you're not getting lost? Is it your engineer that drags you out of the studio?
No, I probably am getting lost along the way. And that's what makes the record unique, I guess.
Okay,
so.
Yeah, sure.
Getting lost and then finding your way through the thick of it all, I guess. There's, light and dark throughout the record. And so it's about navigating through the darkness to get to the light, I think.
Okay. And
without getting too philosophical.
No. It's nice if you have a philosophical background that you want to talk about. What was the fact, or how did you work with deadlines or something? Was there any deadline?
Allow them to put a deadline on me. I just kind of made the record that I wanted to make. And, luckily for me, Megalithic Symphony, the first record, and especially Sail, just kept going and going and going. And, as you and I were talking before we started the interview, the last thing that I think either of us thought was that would be a pop culture phenomenon that it became. So Looking at what the stars aligning for that to be the vehicle to drive me around the world, really, gave me artistic freedom to make the sophomore record I've always wanted to make. In fact, I've been looking forward to making the strange sophomore follow-up record my whole life. So, you know, a lot of people say you spend your whole life writing your first record and 6 months to make the second, where I feel like I've spent my whole life dreaming of this sophomore opportunity.
Oh,
so
cool.
Once the time presented itself, I wasn't going to stop until it was the weirdest fucking record in years. You know?
So it's all part of a plan that seems to work now.
I suppose so.
That's a cool thing. And another cool thing that I think is that you seem to be the only artist who is not talking about deadlines with this record company since Björk. I think she was the last one to put in a contract that she puts out records as soon as she wants to put out.
Exactly.
Record.
You know, and I also think there's something to be said this day and age about waiting a little bit, taking a breath, because today's society with social media and online presence, it's now. Yeah. And you're just face fucked by so many different songs and bands that have success, and they're just trying to whore themselves as much as possible to make as much money as possible, where I feel like less is more, and I care more about the quality rather than quantity.
Yeah, and so many record labels, they're forcing their artists to make a quick second record because the first one was going okay, and we have to be on the market again in 2.5 months.
Yeah, I need to be visible.
Yeah, and listenable and visible.
I want to be invisible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, but I really think that really destroys some of those bands and their music, because they're actually not able to write a hit record in 2.5 months, so they'll just put music on there that's not finished, that's not really good, and then we're all lost.
Yes.
that can't be the goal of the whole
thing. I'm here to find you.
That's so cool. Thank you, Aaron. Let's listen to another beautiful song of your new record. This is the title track, Evil Nation nochmal mit Run auf Lux FM. Run war das gerade der Titeltrack vom zweiten AWOL Nation Album, das hier in Deutschland am 13.03. erschienen ist. Heute Abend spielen AWOL Nation mit der vollen Kapelle im Lido und Aaron Bruno, der Erfinder der Kapelle, ist bei mir im Studio. Er ist mehr als der Erfinder der Formation, er ist auch derjenige, der alle Instrumente eingespielt hat für die neue Platte und das ganze Ding auch selbst produziert hat. I've just told people again that you produced the album yourself and that you recorded the instruments yourself and that you had everything under control, and I want to know how big was the influence of your first record on you composing the second one, because you had this super mega hit sale on the first record, and I kind of imagine that it's hard to get that out of the back of your head that the song exists.
Yeah Well, it's a strange feeling, because it's a song that continues to do really good, you know, even now. And I guess I had control of that song as well.
Yeah.
And so I was very lucky that that was the one that exploded, because then, you know, no one could argue the point of me making the new record the same way.
Yeah.
And it's a dark, I mean, that song to me would fit into this new record as well.
Sure.
Where maybe some of the songs off Megalithic would not fit this new record. So I feel like, you know, I expanded and extended on the darker side.
See?
So I do think it influenced a little bit. And I learned, you know, what I didn't enjoy, too. I learned some of the, I learned a lot of playing live as well. So, you know, what kinds of shows will move an audience. It's one thing to sell records and get on the radio, and it's another thing to move an audience, a sea of people, of some of these massive German festivals that we've done, for example, where I saw firsthand just the most exciting energy in a crowd and you know, people crowd surfing. And they also do this incredible thing where a bunch of people get like sit down like they're rowing a boat in the middle of the pit. Okay. That was really cool. I'd never seen that before.
They're rowing a boat?
Yeah, we saw that at Rock and Ring and Rock in the Park.
Okay.
That was incredible. And so, I would suppose like a song like Run, both those riffs that come as we were laughing as they happen, because it's hilarious. Those are parts that we would have wanted to play live, you know, off the first record. So the live experience definitely influenced some of the brutal tones that I got on the new record.
Yeah. When one was listening to Megalithic Symphony, your first LP, one could already realize that you don't care about genre boundaries too much, right? And now with this new one, it seems as if you kind of rediscovered some other genres that you liked back in the days, like maybe. Metal and industrial.
Yeah.
So is the sound of the record, could you say that's an autobiographical sound?
I would say so, yeah. It's a very, very personal record, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's almost just like a you know, journal entry from my life at that point in time.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I know maybe it sounds slightly industrial, but really it's more of like the hardcore influence that I came up in, and a little bit of the metal influence combined with, you know, the low end and drum sounds that I enjoy so much from 80s hip hop music.
Yeah, that's true.
And then putting that all together, and you know,
it's like Rick Rubin. Yeah. Revisit it, kind of, right? Because that's what made him really popular was the combination of hip-hop beats and
that's funny you say that
guitars.
Because he lives near where I live back home in Malibu, and we've become buddies.
Really?
Yeah, he's a fan of the first record.
Wow.
What?
So,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy is that? Did he come up to you and like say, "Oh, you did a pretty good job on producing this album, Aaron"?
He did. He thought I did a great job. And so I showed him Run when it was done. I went to his house and showed him the whole record just for fun. And I had Rick Rubin's blessing on the record.
Oh,
and
he
loved it. So it was really cool. I remember showing him the new songs in his... He's such a beautiful man, you know. He had his eyes closed and he was really feeling the music. And he opened his eyes after the first three songs and he said, "Man, you make really... strange, beautiful music." And that's what he said to me. And I could have died right then.
That's
I'm like,
the
okay.
Best
yeah, it's like a hero of mine, you know? So that was really cool.
That's the most surprising detail about that new record that I've ever heard. Yeah.
It was cool. I would love to work with him one day, but, you know, I'm kind of on my own path. And I would like to be the next Rick Rubin rather than, you know, work.
Yeah, that's what I want from you, actually, because I think you have your own style. Mm-hmm. And even Rick Rubin is not good enough for your own style. You have to.
Well, he's probably good enough. I just have my own vision. It works best for me.
And
you know?
Have to follow that vision. That's
him and him and Jeff Lynne are my heroes. You know, so those are the guys that I want to follow.
But I mean, maybe you produce the next record on your own, but then you'd be like putting Rick Rubin on top of there, and he's saying something. This record is approved by Rick Rubin. You know,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Right, he'd probably say, "No, I don't think so, Aaron. That's not a good idea." You know?
It's not produced, but approved.
Yes,
by
approved.
Rick Rubin. That would be cool, though.
Hey.
Well, Aaron, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for playing Run. You know, it takes a lot of balls to play a song like that on the radio, and
we have them.
Only a couple stations in the world have played that song, and you're one of them.
Thank you.
So that's really cool. It means a lot to us.
Yeah, cool. And people out there, wer heute Abend ins Lido gehen möchte zum ausverkauften Konzert von Avril Nation, der kann mich jetzt anrufen unter der 030 2000 9000. Berlin 2000 9000 ist die Nummer zum Glück, und wer durchkommt, der kriegt die allerletzten Tickets für Avril Nation im Lido. Thanks you again.
Thank you so much, brother.
Aaron, we'll see you again next year, maybe.
I'll see you in the pit
summer.
Tonight.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Thank you. Bye-bye.